You are listening to episode number 66 of the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast, live from E3. Not really. And of course, like I said, I was too bullshitty. We are not live from E3, but we are the Mighty Warriors 3 Marvel Podcast after a week hiatus due to Memorial Day. I am your host, Ben. Joining us, thankfully, once again, he didn't have to do it, but from Twitter, from the GL Corecast, Mr. Brandon West. Brandon, thank you for filling in to the last moment.
No problem. Happy to be here.
And, of course, the man who's currently watching E3 and bitching about Shadow of the Colossus in 3D, Arnold. Arnold, welcome back to the show once again.
Oh, there's no bitching at all. Shadow of the Colossus was amazing. In 3D, it's going to be even more amazing.
I heard you bitching about the 3D aspect. That's what
it is. No. I think that's fucking fantastic. That game is sweet.
All right. I've never played it. It always looked cool
good
to me.
It's good.
It's simple, too.
We'll discuss more later. It's a very simple, simple game, yes, but so pretty.
Yes, we are not a gaming podcast. We are a Marvel podcast. And we are a podcast dedicated to all things Marvel, whether that's comics, movies, video games, toys, shirts, boxers, sexual underwear if you prefer that. We can discuss that if you requested us. Let's get right to it because I want to talk about Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes in a bit. Wolverine is down to the final eight with Jose Padilla, Doug Liman, Antoine Fuqua, Mark Ronomek, Justin Lin, Gavin O'Connor, James Mangold, and Gary Shore, who it says right here in the article, thanks posted to WS on the GLCMB, is largely a commercial director. And supposedly Gary Shore had produced a trailer that seems to be landing in the job. Now, nothing from my knowledge has been confirmed that he's director, but he's the leading candidate. So, out of all those names, obviously with X-Men First Class hitting, and apparently it's a huge hit, or hit critically at least, I don't know, box office-wise. Wes, you're the biggest...
It made more money opening at midnight than Thor did opening at midnight.
I wouldn't be surprised. X-Men's a bigger name. You just put the X there and people will go see it. No matter who's in it. But Wes, you're the bigger X-Men fan out of all of us here. You love mutants, or especially young mutants. But I don't know if you're necessarily a fan of Wolverine. Out of all those eight, who do you want to see direct the next Wolverine movie?
If it was up to me, I'd definitely choose Doug Liman. He does a lot of production most of the times, but he's, you know, extraordinary with these big block, like almost every summer he has a blockbuster movie coming out. I think the last one he had was Prince of Persia, and you know, don't blame him for Prince of Persia. That's not his fault.
It was a fun movie. It wasn't great. It was a fun movie.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what I would want. Maybe not for this story, but that's what I would want. If I'm going to look at a big blockbuster summer movie that Wolverine will be, then I want somebody like Doug Liman or I think Antoine Fuqua was listed there.
Yes, he was.
Yeah. He did Training Day, and I mean, if that's not enough to, you know, get you a Wolverine job, then I don't know what it is. So it's between those two. I don't think Justin Lin would do it. He's trying to get Terminator off the ground. And everybody else just seems irrelevant. You mentioned Gary being a front runner. I think he's just in a discussion based on that that trailer he did. But I don't think he'll be getting the job.
All right. I mean, the only name I can think of, I recognize, is Antoine Fuqua. I never heard about I just don't pay much attention to directors that much. Half these names there is, but if anybody I would like to see Antoine Fuqua directed, just because I've seen his movies before and I kind of know what to expect. And again, I'm a person who, when you're going to do a comic adaptation, do whatever you want. I don't necessarily care as long as the story is good. But Arnold, you're also a huge fan of the X. Out of all these eight, or possibly anybody else, who would you want to see direct Wolverine?
Anybody that it can do a good job with it, to be completely honest, I'm not going to lie. I don't know a lot of the directors that are on the list, at least not by name. I'm pretty sure I've seen a lot of the things that they've done, and maybe I just didn't know that they were the ones who directed it. But just somebody who can bring a decent Wolverine movie to the table, because we all know Wolverine Origins was just, I don't even know what to call it at this point, but that's a conversation for another show. But yeah, just somebody who can do the material well, do the character justice, and make a good quality movie. I mean, surprise us, we were all surprised. So far from what I've heard, everybody's been pleasantly surprised with the newest X-Men movie, if they can kind of keep up with that and get that same feeling. Like, it's what I walked out of that movie being like, you know what, this movie, if I had spent money on this ticket, I would have not felt that, which nobody was really, at least fans anyway, or comic book fans who have seen all the other movies and read the comics, and I don't think any of us were expecting to walk out of that movie thinking that. So if you can give me that same kind of feeling or that, you know, get that same reaction out of me at the end of a Wolverine movie, dude, job well done. Like, I mean, I think he's a character that a really good movie can be done about, and it doesn't necessarily need to require him running down hallways and hacking and slashing at people 24/7. Like, it's not absolutely necessary. He's a complicated, but at the same time, not a complicated character. So out of that list, whoever can really pull it off and not give out a bunch of bullshit and pull things out of their ass, I'm for it.
Okay, real quick. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Three things. I was wrong about Prince of Persia. He didn't do that, so don't worry about that. Just to list off a couple of things that he did, that Doug Liman did do.
Yeah.
Jumper.
Okay.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith.
Oh, okay.
And Bourne Identity.
Oh, I like all those movies. I like
all
those movies.
Yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed all of those movies.
And I think that's enough. And you mentioned story. I think if we were ever going to get a great Wolverine movie, this is the story we're going to get it with. The whole Japan story.
That's just what I want.
Yeah, it's perfect.
That shit would be great.
With the hand,
it'll perfectly match the first
Spider-Man. Get enough of the love story. You throw in Margo, and then which gives you fodder for further movies if you want to continue it. Like, you know, right there, you've got your next villain following down the road. Like, it practically writes itself half the time.
And if everything goes right, he marries. If he even sleeps with Mariko in the movie, Wes gets happy, and then he gets Doc in Wolverine 3. So there you go. I want to post a question that I don't think we've asked, and it just popped in my head. Now, what about if Hugh Jackman himself? Because Hugh Jackman has a stranglehold on this character. I'm not going to say anything, but let's just say Wolverine, it wasn't the last time we saw him. What if he said, you know what, I'm going to do this myself. I'm going to star in it. I'm going to direct it. Which has precedent. I mean, the one I obviously can think of is Sylvester Stallone as Rocky Balboa, where I believe he directed at least the first one. And, of course, he directed the last one that came out about 5 years ago. And it was a damn pretty good job. Now, I know Jackman doesn't have any directorial experience, but Sly didn't either. So what do you think of that proposition? I mean, Hugh Jackman knows his character inside and out. He's been this character for almost 10 years now. Wes, what about you? Would you accept Hugh Jackman directing a Wolverine movie?
I think I would accept it because, like you said, we know he's passionate about the character. I mean, he's the one who fought for this script. Like, I think the reason why he went along with the first ridiculous story is so that he can get to this story. And that being said, no, God no, this story can't be ruined. Like we just said, this is set up so perfectly to be a truly great X-Men or mutant in general movie, and there's no way that I would let that happen. There's no way that Fox would let that happen. Even if you got Adam McKay, who's a comedy director, to go out there, it'd be better than Hugh Jackman. And that's no disrespect. I'm sure he has a great vision somewhere down the line. I'm sure he'll do something. But no, I would never take that chance. Not on this story. Maybe Origins 3, he can try his hand.
All right. And Arnold, what do you think of the proposition that I'm throwing out there that Hugh Jackman would be directing Wolverine?
I don't know, because knowing something or a character inside and out doesn't necessarily make you a good director for it. Because, I mean, yeah, knowing a story and everything is all well and great and good and puts you in the right mindset to be able to do that, but with no kind of directing skills, it doesn't matter how good your story is, it could still come out like crap. Again, not saying that he would make crap. I'm pretty sure he would be really dedicated and he could probably come out with something good, but I would rather see him if, for like the next movie or two, maybe co-direct or, you know, assistant director, something like that, so he gets his hands dirty a little bit, but he's not necessarily making all of the final decisions. You know, he's got his hand in it so that at least you can see, oh, well, this was co-directed by Hugh Jackman and this other guy we like. Then let's see if he can do a full one on his own. But I don't know how I would feel about him just delving into one on his own right off the bat.
I agree. I would be open to it. I mean, obviously, again, Hugh Jackman, I think he was listed as a producer, an executive producer on X-Men Origins Wolverine, and, you know, so he has his hands in the process outside of acting, which most actors, they kind of just play the role and that's it, like Ryan Reynolds as Green Lantern this summer, or, you know, I'm pretty sure Chris Hemsworth just put on, you know, did whatever he did and that's it, whereas Hugh Jackman, I think, has some kind of, he must have something in his contract on what happens to Wolverine, to that character, to that franchise. It has to be, you know, especially by this point. But I would give him a shot just because, you know, everybody has to start somewhere. And either A, it can be really, really crap, or B, it'd be really, really good.
Look at Ben Affleck.
That's true. That's true. Yep. So I would be for the final eight we get. I hope, just out of sheer name alone, Antoine Fuqua would get it. But hey, if Fox wants to say, Hugh Jackman, do whatever you want with it, that's fine for me. I'd rather have him knowing the character in and out and learning on, even if it means learning on the way as he goes, that's fine with me. Sometimes that's the best way you learn is as you do it versus just reading books or writing. But that's enough of that. Let's talk about a movie that hasn't even dropped yet and that was kind of off kilter. No, not off kilter, but has been off the radar for a long time, and that is The Amazing Spider-Man. With the kid from The Social Network, whose name I can't remember right now, and I want to say
Andrew Garfield. Yeah.
I wanted to say Eduardo, but that's his name from The Social Network.
Eduardo.
But if you notice, we haven't talked about it in a long time, ever since they released those pics a little around last year, basically because they haven't released any information on it. I'm pretty sure they've been busy shooting Andrew Garfield swinging in the spider suit. You know, the villain. I can't even remember the villain now because it's been so long. But it turned out there is some news coming in that they will be coming to San Diego Comic-Con with, I'm assuming, and this is just for me, that a teaser trailer is going to be there or some kind of preview. Now, obviously, this whole reboot, when it first came out, it was one of the more controversial things, and talk about a week of controversy when it first hit, of how can you start a franchise after only a few years, you know? Restart a franchise. Obviously, ever since they've shown pictures of Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone as Gwen Stacy, the positiveness line came out, I guess. So what do you guys expect from the Amazing Spider-Man crew, the cast? Do you expect a teaser? Do you expect nothing? What do you expect? Let's go to Arnold first, since you're actually going to San Diego Comic-Con.
Yes, I will be there. I'm probably not going to actively hunt these guys out.
Make them wear.
I find it really hard to believe that my roommate might, because he's just adamantly against this movie. But I would be highly surprised if they had the entire cast there and they weren't showing some kind of screening or like preview or teaser or something like that. I feel like that would be kind of pointless, considering it's not like we're close to the movie and they're getting there just for the hype machine. I think this is kind of what the kickoff for the hype machine will be for the rest of the tenure of marketing and such. So it's cool. If I see him, if I can manage to get into the panel or whatever, I'll definitely go check it out. It's always cool to go and check things out earlier than everybody else. But yeah, just kind of indifferent. I'll see what happens when I'm down there.
All right, and let's go to Brandon. Brandon, I don't know how closely you've been following all this Amazing Spider-Man news. Obviously, but are you going to San Diego this year? I know you were there last year.
Yeah, I'll probably be there.
All right,
barring some freak accident.
That panel for us.
Sure.
Anyways,
don't make the man do work. I'll go if that's the case.
All right, but what do you expect from The Amazing Spider-Man? And I guess since we haven't really had you on here when we talked about it, what are your thoughts on anything that's come before?
As in the Maguire movies?
No, no, the I guess the footage and all the news press release we've gotten so far of the Amazing Spider-Man.
No. I haven't liked anything I've seen. I think everything I've seen has been those unofficial on the set pics taken by Joe Schmo from a third story window, and those have all been horrible. So I'm trying not to judge the film on that, but I'm still excited for it because, like you just said, Andrew Garfield was amazing in The Social Network, and I love Emma Stone. So I can't be disappointed in this movie. I don't have a problem with the reboot.
You can.
No, I can't. Emma Stone is just the definition of beautiful, and Andrew Garfield's got fun hair. So I don't see the problem.
They need to tone that shit down. That's one of the biggest problems that I have. That's right up there. It's as terrible as
the fact that you're
round-headed Spider-Man shape in Ultimate Spider-Man. It's just as bad as that look. Spider-Man should not be a Super Saiyan.
I think it's fun. I mean, it's hair. It's not like...
No, I agree, but he looks goofy. Like, even goofier than he should look.
It's Peter Parker. I think that's the charm of it. But as for Comic-Con, I'd be surprised if they didn't show anything. Even if they just brought out Emma or Andrew, they'd have to show something. They filmed too much not to show anything. I mean, Green Lantern had 2 months worth of work in before... Comic-Con last year, and they showed a nice little scene of a great punch. I'd be surprised. I'd be shocked if they didn't show anything, and I really hope it's awesome.
And again, I'm the biggest Spider-Man fan here. Spider-Man is my favorite character much. It's a book I don't think I'll ever drop, no matter how, unless it gets really bad. Peter Parker's my boy. So and this is the first time where I'm going into a movie where I'm conscious about the comics and everything. Even though I don't know why I said that, because I just want them to tell a good story. But I also don't want them to bastardize my favorite character again. Kind of like in Spider-Man 3. So I'm eager to see what they have for San Diego, despite that I won't be there. I'll be there in spirit, with Arnold, on a little camera. Let me get every detail. But anyways, I'm excited. 2012 can't get fast enough here for the Avengers. And the Amazing
Is that
Spider-Man.
Summer? Is it Amazing Spider-Man coming out in the summer of next year? Or?
I heard 2012. I'm assuming it would be a summer release. I mean, it's fucking Spider-Man.
Yeah, I mean, winter is a big time for big movies, too.
Yeah, I would just think they would keep it.
Yeah, I don't think there's a release date yet, though.
Yeah, I know it's 2012.
I could be completely wrong on that, though.
2012 can't come fast enough, just like for Batman Inc. Anyways, let's move on to something. Before we get into the books, we don't normally talk about this, and sadly Brandon hasn't been keeping up with the show, but me and Arnold are going to talk about Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes, which I believe just did its 18th episode called The Ultron Imperative. Now, keep in mind, before we go, I have seen the entire remaining 6 episodes. We're not going to talk about those. In fairness to the people who don't want spoilers, we're only talking about the previous 18. So we're just going to do this real quick, what we liked, what we disliked, what are we, So let's go to Arnold first. What have you liked so far in these 18-plus episodes, now that we've gotten more character development?
Honestly, just about everything. I don't find myself disappointed with this show very much, if at all. Big kudos to whoever decided that they were going to cut out that terrible, 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 terrible fucking opening theme song. That's probably the best decision awesome. That they made on that entire fucking show. that song was wretched. Thank God for DVRs. But I'm still digging it. These last two episodes with the whole Ultron thing, which we saw coming the second they showed any kind of piece of Ultron in the beginning. But what I do like about this show is they do a lot, they do foreshadowing really well.
Yes.
Like, they drop the hint, you see a lot of these things here and there, and you're like, oh, I know what that is. Oh, that could totally lead up to that. That could totally lead up to that. I mean, in the last, it's been 18 episodes completely now?
Yes, 18 up to U.S. release.
In the last 18 episodes, we started off with Gravitron, who I didn't know about until that show. But We've delved into all this kind of stuff with Thor. There's still so much going on with Loki that we haven't seen yet, because during all the mini episodes, he was plotting his whole big plan that hasn't even come to fruition.
Exactly.
We've seen an appearance of Skrulls. We've had a cameo by Ben Grimm, and we just got Ultron whooping all kinds of ass. Like, and all of this is within us. Let's call it two seasons if you counted the mini episodes as a season, so to speak. So far, so good. I find myself thoroughly enjoying the show. I'm glad that they made Hulk simultaneously not just a rumbling, smashing idiot, but they've actually made him funny.
Hulk is great.
He is. He's great in the show. And just seeing his little random jokes and side comics are awesome. And then just seeing his face when he's ripping things to shreds is also just as hysterical. I even like the character development that they did within the most recent episode that we had with the Ultron thing. I'm sorry, the episode previous. We had Ultron supposedly killed Thor. And, you know, of all people, Thor and Hulk have been going at it and arguing and back and forth at each other since they both joined the team. Hulk found out what Ultron did to Thor and went apeshit on him, which I thought was awesome. But yeah, I could go on and on and on. This could be a whole show about on its own. But I'm thoroughly digging the show. I can't wait to see what's coming down in the road. And with all this Ultron stuff, we're setting up for Jan Pym to get smacked up by Hank Pym.
Yeah, I don't know if we'll get that.
It won't happen, but it'll happen off screen.
Well, I'm not gonna
It was her idea anyway. I blame that Ultron shit on Jan. It was her idea to use them to fight.
I will say this. My favorite moment, and forgive me if this this hasn't happened yet, but there was a moment where I want to say they're fighting Ultron, they're fighting somebody. I think it's when they're fighting Hydra, and Cap basically looks to Hulk as like, Hulk is like saying, they look at me as a monster, and Cap says, you know what we called you back in my time? And he says, a hero. And Hulk just looks at him and just goes up to beat ass. I fucking cheered a little bit when that
happened. Was a good one. Yeah, I saw that. So that was cool.
The sense of camaraderie, you know, the scene, it's the character, it's much like how Marvel comics are done in that,
yeah
the big action's nice, but when you, like the scene where Steve was teaching Tony how to fight, and then you had Hawkeye and Hulk fucking jeering him from the side, you know? They made Kang such a great villain, but not a wahaha villain, but a villain who only wanted to save his loved one. You know, that was his whole thing, you know? Plus, they continue to prove that Hulk's strongest there is when nobody could get through Kang, yet Hulk, because he was angry, bursted through his little bubble. You know, they've made Kang a threat. Ultron was already a threat. They made him an even more dangerous threat, you know? Also proof that the more Wi-Fi stuff we put up, the more we're going to let AI things like Ultron live forever. So, and the animation is just beautiful. It's the perfect Avengers cartoon, you know? I never thought I would see a Marvel cartoon with the casket of motherfucking Winters, you know? The conversations between Tony and Thor, you know, I honestly can't say enough positive things about this series. In fact, I'll say this much. I don't have anything negative to say about it. I mean, if they do, I can't think of any, you know?
I already said the most negative thing I had to say about this show, they got rid of.
Yeah, the cartoon, which I love, which is another thing. Great action. Hawkeye, Hawkeye might easily maybe my favorite character in the show. Before we move on to our book of the week, if you buy... the Avengers, they release Volume 1 and Volume 2. Initially, I wasn't going to buy them, but after I saw all six episodes, the remaining six, I was like, okay, fuck it, I have to buy these, and I'll buy Volumes 3 and 4 when they come out. You get a sneak peek of Volume 2. We're not going to talk about it, but let's just say this much. It's going to get cosmic in Season 2. So there you go. Brandon, I don't know if you would have anything to attribute to this conversation. Do you have anything?
I don't like the design. I guess it would have to take me a couple more episodes. I've only seen the first couple of episodes, so I don't want to bash the show based on the pilot. So, no. But I love your enthusiasm. You guys loving it so much, it makes me want to try it again. So.
Yeah, I really think you should. Like, it really does. It does have, you know, a little bit of a kiddie feel to it, but not, like, downplaying.
It gets real.
It's not downplaying to children. Like, there are some moments we've sat here and, like, your jaw is just wide open. You're like, holy shit. Like, stuff goes down on this show.
I think, I'm sorry. I think my problem was that I bailed on the show before the Avengers became the Avengers, so I think the main character was still Iron Man and Nick, so it's like, yeah. Right.
And in the show for a while, I know that you're going to go into it, but it's a little spoilers, but Nick Fury's been out of the picture for a good number of episodes. Like, he up and disappeared, yeah. And as Nick Fury is wont to do.
Which we have an idea why, and we won't say anything because...
Right, yeah, but it's really good. The team dynamic works really well. I would love for them to add a couple of other people on the team. Hopefully
they're
going
to be adding people.
Yeah, at the same time, right now it's not necessary. But I'm waiting for, like, the uber big bad to come around. That's like, yo, we need to go and round up the rest of the people in this universe and go to town. But I think you'd really like it. It just, the character dynamics are great. The interactions with people feel right, you know, stuff like that.
I will say this much, in that the guy who voices Tony Stark, I think he's doing a bad Robert Downey Jr. impression. Like, he's, like...
He does take some getting used to.
Because it's like... You know, RDJ set the tone for how Tony Stark should act, and that's this flamboyant, quip-shooting playboy, which is cool. It's great. It's a great characterization for Tony Stark. But I feel like he's trying way too hard for it, and it's not easing into it, you know? But that's my only negative criticism.
I could also say one other thing. The way they draw Thor sometimes, like, I know he's supposed to be massive and, like, godlike, but, and, you know, they make him that size, but sometimes they draw his cape and stuff. Like, he's wearing these ginormous fucking shoulder pads, like M. Bison to an extreme. Like, I understand what you're trying to give off, but his stuff doesn't need to be that ginormous and wide. I kind of wish they would tone his costume down a little bit more. But, again, that's even still a minor complaint compared to the rest of the show.
All right. Well, there you go. That was our Earth's Mightiest Heroes discussion. And, Wes, Brandon, I encourage you to check out. Buy... if you can buy them cheaply, the volumes 1 and volume 2, and just watch them through. Gamma World's awesome. So let's move on to our book of the week, which was The Huge Event, Part 3 of 7, Fear Itself, written by Matt Fraction, art by Stuart Immonen. So shit went down in this issue, or at least kind of. Basically, the story is they continue to fight against the Serpent, despite that he was nowhere to be found. Also, we get a hint that apparently Odin is preparing this great machine that he's going to blast, which kind of sounds like something the Bifrost Bridge was in the movie, where if they leave it on too long, it'll blow up that planet or existence or whatever. So basically, we get the sense that Odin kind of gives Thor the Flash Gordon thing. You have X amount of time to save the world, you know? So, but the biggest page turn of them all was Bucky Cap leading the charge of Black Widow and the Falcon and some of the other secret Avengers against Scotty, who has the body of Sin, of the female Red Skull, puts up a good fight and gets a hammer to his robotic arm. He loses his robotic arm and proceeds to then, looks like he's dead or incapacitated, one or the other. I like this issue much more than I have the previous issue. I wasn't necessarily happy with the second issue. I liked what Matt Fraction was trying to do in this. I felt this sense of, okay, now I know, okay, now shit's getting real in this issue. I love the Hulk pages. In Loki, while he – and this isn't, didn't play a big role in this. The two small panels that he played in this I thought was really well done. But the one fault I have with this issue in that it's kind of setting up the tie-ins in a way, in that, okay, yeah, here's what I'm going to show you this, I don't get the feeling that you can read Fear Itself by itself, and, you know, I'm pretty sure you can understand the story, but I feel like it's basically goading you to check out these other tie-ins if you want to see this, because I'm not going to show you this. And I know events have done that, but... there should be easy transitions to that, you know. It should give you enough in the pages of Fear Itself, but if you do want more, you can go and get this. That's only my name is criticism. And seeing Steve Rogers charging the battle was cool. On the same page that Thor charges in the battle. I will say that before I hand it off, Stuart Immonen once again kills it. He's probably one of the more underrated artists working in comics right now. You know, a guy who can get his shit done on time. I mean, just look. I mean, this book is virtually a lot of splash pages, and if you just look at some of the splash pages, they're just phenomenal. Yeah, they're not Jim Lee, Todd McFarlane-esque details, but they're still beautifully rendered. You know, you get the sense of, you know, when the thing destroys Yancey Street, or the thing possesses Angerer, which I kind of giggled like that that's his name, destroys Yancey Street, and if you know Marvel continuity, he comes from Yancey Street, so that's sad for him, you know? And his one, and that last page of Bucky getting, it looks like the hammer's getting going through him, you know, it's just all beautiful, you know? It's amazing how this guy isn't a bigger name in comics. So overall, I give Fear Itself number 3 a solid 3.8 out of 5. It was very fun, very entertaining. Again, I said I thought it lead into the tie-ins a little too much. You should give me a little bit more. You know, Stuart Immonen killed it, though. But let's go to the outsider. Wes, you haven't been too happy with Fear Itself so far, but what did you think of this issue?
Yeah, you're right. The previous two issues were crap. Well, let me not be that harsh. They were uninteresting. But this issue, by far, blows those issues out of the water. Makes me, like, amazing. Amazing stuff. I can't speak of how great Stuart Immonen is. I'm looking at this page right now where Bucky gets up and he can't hear and his hearing's coming back. And that's just like, that is such a great detail. Like, I never would have thought of that. Like, dude, like, You see these big, huge battles all the time, and to think that somebody's hearing gets blown out just for a second, like, how, like, the detail in that. Thank you, Matt Fraction, because that was, like, the most impressive thing I've read all week. But, yeah, more on the book. It was battle after battle, and while Stewart has some great, great looking art, he does need to work on his storytelling. There's a scene where I think it was Scotty. Yeah, that probably works better. Where she rips the arm off and she just launches him. It's just like the paneling is just all wrong because she goes from ripping the arm off and then the next thing you see is his body flying in the air. It's just off sometimes, but it still looks good. And eventually he'll get the hang of it, and he'll become one of the best artists in the industry today. But story-wise, excellent. One of the best endings of an event comic ever. Not ending, but a great ending to a third issue. I do share your opinion that it was completely over the top with the tie-in luring, similar to DC's Flashpoint, where it just... I have no interest in reading Crazy Hulk or Crazy Thing, whatever you want to call them, whatever weapon you want to give them. It's not going to make me, it's like brainwashing all over again. I know they'll be fine. There's no interest there. But as far as the main battle goes with Scotty, I'm all for it. Issue 4 has me. It better be freaking good.
All right. Let's go to Arnold. What did you think of Fear Itself number 3?
Right off the bat, I'm going to share you guys sentiments about the beginning of it. Still 3 issues in, and we're still seeing hammers falling, but we're still seeing people getting hammers, which, you know, I mean, if you read into the spoilers beforehand, we kind of all already knew who was getting hammers, so I guess that's maybe why we feel like it's dragging on. But I feel like that all could have been done already by this issue and then went into it proper. That aside, though, I too thoroughly enjoyed this issue. Shit is going down. People are getting effed up left and right. Ben, I didn't even notice the correlation between, like, having on the same page Thor leave it going into battle and Cap going into the battle, like, simultaneously. I didn't even make that little nice connection that they did in the book.
They do have two big movies coming out, so you want to have those two at the front.
Yeah, exactly. It makes sense. That splash page, I know everybody gives shit about splash pages, but the splash page of the mind-controlled or hammer-controlled thing blasting the shit out of Yancey Street, that was crazy. like, all I'm thinking of when I see a scene like that is all of those people. I know they said that they evacuated, but still. That whole area of New York, Yancey Street, is done for like a decade at least.
Yeah, there's like a couple there's nothing of people left there.
But rubble and shrapnel. Yeah, there's some people floating around. They are donezo. I'm sorry. If they show any human being getting up and walking after this, I'm calling bullshit like you wouldn't believe. Because that was just nuts. Like, so that was a big plus for me. I thoroughly enjoyed that. I want to see. I'm intrigued to see where they're going with these hammer thing. Like, are some people going to be able to get control over it? Are they all just going to be evil? Are we looking at kind of the Thor version of the Horsemen of Apocalypse, which, you know, depending on how they do it, could just be kind of cheesy. But I am digging this book a lot and thoroughly excited to keep reading on and seeing what's going down. And on the plus side, a lot of the where all the other hammers and things and characters are taking place are happening in books I'm already reading, so I don't need to pick up that many extra tie-ins, if at all. Right now, the only tie-in to this I'm picking up, actually, is the Spider-Man one, and that's because it's Chris Yost, and I think he's excellent.
I think you kind of ruined this for me.
What?
The whole Four Horsemen thing, I think. Like, that wasn't even in my head, and now I'm thinking, oh my God, it's Mr. Sinister.
You'll forget it, you know, like... Like, I can see why.
Yeah, I mean, but who hasn't done it before?
Mr. Sinister does not own the
copyright. Yeah, when you know, anytime you've got something that's like a big bad like this and deals with a prophecy, you know you're always going to have the quote-unquote apostles helping to bring along said prophecy. Mm-hmm. So it's not too out of the norm. I'm just hoping that there's going to be more to it than that, because it is a different kind of magic, a different kind of, you know, thing going on, and I want to see where it leads. You know, are they supposed to be coming together to raise something up, or is it just they've sent these hammers out and their job is to just go and destroy everything? Please what?
Please don't bring Blackest Night up into this.
No. I'm not talking like that. I'm not talking about, like, bring people back from the dead or anything like that, or weird things like that. But, you know, is the hammers falling down the one of the major points of the endgame, or just another smaller thing, although it's not smaller considering all the damage, leading to an even bigger thing, is what I want to know.
All right, well, they're going after Asgard.
What's the essence of the hammer?
And Odin's...
Right, is it just to cause mayhem and destroy Asgard, or... But, again, I dig it. I, too, like the ending. I like how they did that slow fade to white and, you know, kind of left it as maybe he's gone unconscious, or he might just be dead. I doubt they'll kill him off so soon, but you never know.
Yeah, he's been around since 5 years. All in all, I'll give it dead for 60, you know?
Exactly. I'll give it a good 3.5 out of 5.
Yeah. I will say this. I don't for one second believe Bucky is dead. If they do, hey, he had a nice run.
I don't.
Also, I will say this. I did pick up a Time and Fear and Something Deep. If you like the Defenders, pick it up. Last page. Fucking awesome. Anyways, let's move on to individual reviews, and I decided to go with Criminal number one, Criminal: The Last of the Innocent number one by Ed Brubaker and Sean Phillips. Now, before I get actually into discussing this issue, you know how in comics we get to the point where there's certain in comics where you hear so much about a particular story. Oh, this Watchmen is so good. Kingdom Come is the best DC story ever. You know, Frank Miller's run on Daredevil is the epitome of what a run should be. You know, these put on the pedestal kind of stories. Now, I started reading comics a little over 5 years ago now, and for me, that was Criminal. Criminal was always the book that I always constantly heard of. Oh, you should be reading Criminal. It's the best comic out there, all this and all that. And for whatever reason, I just never read it. I was reading other things. For one, it was crime noir, and it never interested me. But I decided, you know what? Instead of paying into the DC money machine and with picking up Flashpoint, Batman, Darkest Night, or Flashpoint, Abinster, Green Lantern, I passed the buff for those and picked up Criminal: Last of the Innocent. And in a week where it's all about this story, my stories don't matter, my stories are gone, you know, all this bullshit that I can't fucking stand, this was the best fucking comic book I read. I know how enthused I was for Fear Itself, but from beginning of page one to the beginning to the last page of this, this was fucking comics. This is what comics should be made of. This is what I wish every single comic book was like. Unrealistic, I know. But basically, we're introduced to this character named Riley, who has to come home because his dad has, I believe it's stomach cancer or a form of cancer. So, and he's married to a socialite who apparently she's cheating on him with a best friend, or the friend, not a friend, but a guy he hates. So you already have that aspect. He's a small-time crook who works, again, who works for her, his wife's dad. That sounded confusing. But he goes home, and sort of there's a notion in the art where you get the modern-day story, not modern-day, the story that's set in 1982, which is done in Sean Phillips's traditional pencils. But then whenever it does, which correlates into why it's called The Last of the Innocent, which is sort of a play on Dr. Edgar Wharton's Seduction of the Innocent, the book that sort of banned crime comics and horror comics back in the 50s, it's done in that archy kind of style, that old back in style, but it's done with sort of a modern sensibility. And what I mean is, and the thing that embodies it, there's a panel where Felicity, the socialite, her dad comes in. I thought I heard that Riley in here is even talking in 50s, you know, as if it was a 1950s comic book. And she's like, no, he's not here, and like, just pay me more money or something. That's irrelevant. But then you realize, oh, he was fingering her while her father was there. And she's like, did I say stop? You know, starting saying that the old days weren't as clean as everybody likes to think of, and he's sort of reliving his childhood. He sees the girl, the literal girl next door he's known since 8, and everybody thought they were going to get married, and he's kind of flirting with her. And there's a dream sequence, he's reading his old crime comics, and there's a dream sequence where he's reliving he's seeing his old life in that Archie style, but you see Sean Phillips renders him as his normal style, and he wants it all back. How can I get this back? And you know, he's looking at his wife, who, you know, he knows about the cheating. He hasn't said anything yet, and she wants to get the fuck out of this small rink-dink town. And he says, I know how to escape. I know how to get it all back. And it's just the last panel of him looking at her and says, I have to kill my wife. Boom. And that right there solidified me, gave it. From the story, you got introduced to every single character. Edward Baker made me care about every single character. He made me care about their past. He made me care about what's going to happen to Felicity and Riley in the future. Is he actually going to kill her? Is he gonna cheat on his wife with this the girl next door, whose name I can't think of right now? And Sean Phillips' art, just the modern-day style alone and the 50s retrospective style, was so perfect. It's perfect, and not only in his look, but in what Wes was saying earlier about Fear Itself and how MMM was lacking in storytelling. Phillips had that storytelling. It was, this is what young artists should aspire to be, you know? This is, instead of people bitching about continuity and all this crap, read Criminal, where technically it doesn't matter, but it's a damn good story. 5 out of 5 for me. This is the book everybody should be reading. This is a book for years that I was told, you should be reading Criminal. Well, now I'm part of that voice. You should be reading Criminal. Don't pick up that Flashpoint tie-in. Don't pick up that Fear Itself tie-in. Pick up Criminal. Support creator-owned comics. I'm done.
Did you drop the mic?
I was going to, but I didn't know how to create that sound effect.
Served!
It was damn good. I've been waiting ever since I read that on Wednesday. But enough of that. We're actually going to go from a creator-owned book to a Fear Itself tie-in, I believe, with Brandon with Avengers Academy. Take it away.
No, it was not a,
oh, was it?
A tie-in. Oh, okay. No, this was the point one issue.
Oh, okay.
Avengers Academy 14.1, written by a guy I had never read a comic by, so I was excited for this. Christos Gage, I heard he had just signed to Marvel exclusively, so I was amped to finally get to read some Gage. Not a fan of Gage. This issue was padded with dialogue, and I understand that you want to develop the characters and show their distinctive voices in this point one issue, because you only get a chance to hook somebody once. But it was so forced. Everybody had to have a nice little quip in here and here. And just because you can have a character reference the fact that they're making a quip doesn't mean you're excused from making a bad line of dialogue. And that's what we got in the first 5 or 6 pages of this comic. It was just bad dialogue between characters. Last time I was on the show, we talked about Spider-Man and the Fantastic Four and how great he fit there and how much I missed his quips. This book needs that kind of writing. It needs that Spider-Man element in order for it to work, as most teen-centric comics do. And it just didn't have it. I mean, the art was decent, nothing spectacular. I think the artist is Mike Chin, guy I never heard of. But I don't know. I mean, the story did get better as the comic went on. Just to lay out the plot real quick. There's a Superboy genius who's filthy rich. He turns out he has powers, and he was with these kids in Osborn U, being tortured and tested along with them. And apparently he made it out fine. He's rich, smart, and he has superpowers. As the issue goes on, he lures them in, trying to become their friends in order for them to end up working for him instead, and, you know, stopping them from saving the world, which he thinks is ridiculous. And then some snooty girl with a horrible costume says, no, that's a bad idea. And the entire team just takes her side. It's not a bad idea. Every character in this issue has an awful outfit, ridiculous powers that don't usually benefit the situation at hand, or at least in this instance it didn't. And and they don't do anything but bitch and complain about how the Avengers are better than them. So, I mean, if anything, they should be looking forward to quitting their jobs, getting paid handsomely to stand next to a genius and, you know, pose. The character motivations just seemed like, oh, we're doing the right thing because we're doing the right thing. You're looking ridiculous. I mean, if these are truly teenagers, if that's what I'm supposed to believe, that this is the future that of society, then they should be at least have the fleeting thought of, yeah, maybe you're right. Maybe I shouldn't walk out with a spider web covering half my face and claiming to be someone called Vale. I mean, it's ridiculous. And the guy can supposedly cure you. The character motivations in this issue were just awful. And I took the liberty of reading the letter page in the back of the issue, and he tells you what's coming up ahead. And all I could think of is, why on earth would I want to read this Fear Itself tie-in coming up, which you brought up, when you don't have a grasp on your characters? And if the previous 13 issues were anything like this 14th point, anything like this point one issue, then I would never, ever recommend this to anyone. That being said, he does write a very funny villain. The boy genius with superpowers. That's where his quips work. Unfortunately, all his dialogue was surrounded by 6 to 7 word balloons of terrible dialogue. So, yeah, the best thing for me is just to run away from this comic, which I had heard so much about, so much good things about. I'm terribly disappointed in Gage. I'll never remember the name Mike Chin, and Avengers Academy is worse than Generation Hope, and I'm close to dropping Generation Hope.
I think I'm the only person on the planet who likes Generation Hope. I have yet to find another person who enjoys this book.
I liked one issue of that book. No, this makes Generation Hope look like Batman Incorporated. It's awful. It's awful. We need to get to your review before I get angry.
You go railing off on the rest
and
of
that's
it.
That's a shame about that negative review, because I picked up the first Avengers Academy issue a year ago, which I can't believe it's already been a year, And I've heard nothing but quality praise, so it's kind of,
So you dropped it after a great review?
Well, no, I really liked the first issue, but due to financial reasons, I dropped the book, and I wanted to stick with it, and I was disappointed that it didn't.
Was Gage the initial writer?
Gage has been the writer for all the issues.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
Oh, wow.
I've heard a lot of people like it, though, so...
Well, no.
Yeah, so did I. That's why I picked it up.
In the backup that they did in Spider-Man, whichever one that they did the backup of Avengers Academy, I actually read that, because if you go back to our past shows, I was adamantly against Avengers Academy. But what I've seen here and there, I've liked, maybe it's because other people are writing it. I mean, the most exposure I've had to Avengers Academy, aside from that extra issue in the back, is in Spider-Man, which is being written by Dan Slott, so maybe it's just that's the reason why I like them, because he's writing it.
Christos Gage actually wrote those. The Avengers.
Did he write those?
Yeah, he did.
Okay. Should I have my books right in front of me?
And to be fair, I don't want to completely destroy what this book is, you know, about, because I understand point one issues are hard. You have to cater to your fans and incoming fans, and maybe I just wasn't in there. Maybe it's just that time of the month for me, and you know, I just picked the worst time in the world to read this book, because I'm coming off a high of X-Men First Class, where it's perfect team talking to each other, and it's just perfect, and then I get this, and now I'm just like,
you
oh no,
you Avengers 13, okay. Then. But anyways, let's move on. To Arnold, who's going to give us her regular X-23 update. Still not canceled, huh?
Still not canceled. Still going strong. And still good, in my opinion. Aside from the brief ending...
I hate to interrupt you.
I
hate to interrupt you, but I just realized Zatanna's getting canceled in September. Oh, crap. It just hit me. Go on. Okay. I'm going to go cry over here for a second.
But with this book, which left off with the last page of what looked like Jubilee about to, like, take blood off of X-23's neck, that initially doesn't... Well, it does happen, but Jubilee starts to get some flashes and images of Laura's, you know, life and back history, and her when she was, like, batshit crazy on the trigger sense, if you've been reading X-23. That's been a big deal about her, or anything that, since she's shown up, that whole trigger sense is something that they've been doing to her since... She was part of the Weapon X program. It kind of just makes her lose her mind completely, and it goes into this massive killing rage till pretty much everybody around her is dead or till her mission is complete. So in the brief chat between Jubilee and Laura, you know, it's a lot of character development. You see both of them kind of talking about dealing with their life and their quote-unquote bloodlust. Unfortunately, yes, for anybody that read that terrible, terrible Curse of the Mutants opening for X-Men, Jubilee is a vampire, as if she wasn't useless and unnecessary and annoying enough. Now she's a vampire. So she's kind of dealing with her thirst. She had to leave Xavier's because, you know, people were always looking at her kind of weird, etc. Kind of the same, all the same stuff that Laura's going through and trying to come to terms with. And Jubilee makes it a point to tell Laura that when she had gotten those images, she did sense that there was some part of Laura still in there during the whole trigger sense thing that was trying to fight it, or a glimpse of her almost fighting it but not succeeding. So she feels that she'll be able to do it. As we go along, you find out that these guys are synthesizing a trigger sense and are possibly about to go and send it around. So everybody thinks that they're going to try and make Laura go nuts again and start going on a killing rampage. What you find out now is that they have augmented the trigger sense, and now it can work on anyone, human, mutant alike. It's not just Laura, so you're going to have all these people going into this crazy, massive killing rage. And it kind of ends with a fight between Jubilee and Laura, and they're about to get hit by a very, very, very fast-moving train. and that's where the issue ends. I'm still digging this book. I'm giving it a 4 out of 5. The art is pretty good. Surprisingly enough, I dislike the cover art, but the art in the book itself is really, really good. I do joke, sometimes everything's kind of got like this hazy mist to it. It's an odd reference, but anybody that watches anime will get it. It's kind of like Sailor Moon episodes. Feel like everything kind of had this weird, foggy kind of haze every single episode. Like, it was peculiar. But the way they draw Laura, she's beautiful. Jubilee does look kind of anime-ish, especially with the vampire fangs now, but I could give two shits about Jubilee. But it's slowly becoming a team book without being a team book, because you now have Laura, Gambit, Wolverine, and Jubilee all together, and they're kind of traveling around. So it's a nice, fun dynamic. You kind of see, you're still seeing Gambit kind of in the mentor role for Laura, the same way Wolverine was in the mentor role for Jubilee. So it makes sense for all four of them to kind of be together working it out. But solid art, still solid story. I'm giving it a 4 out of 5.
All right, and there you go, our regular X-23 update, as I mourn the losses of Tana. Anyways, different show. Now let's move on to our Versus of the Week, which, if you tuned in 2 weeks ago, we did Movie Thor, Creeper, Superman versus Movie Thor. We're going to do a little take. We're going to do it again. But this time, we're going to do Ben Affleck Daredevil versus Michael Keaton Batman from the 1989 and 1992 Batman and Batman Returns movies. So there you go. On the hand, you have a vigilante Catholic fighting for justice who's blind as fuck. The other hand, you have the Batman. And ideally, in a normal comp, we did a Dick Grayson versus Matt Murdock fight, but of course, this is a different medium, of course. I know it's gonna be, people are gonna call Marvel fanboy on this for me saying this, but I have to go with the man who will do whatever it takes to win, the man who will break Kingpin's kneecaps, the man who will leave you on a train track and let you die, the man who isn't afraid to kill in this particular movie. I'm gonna go with Matt Murdock or Ben Affleck as Daredevil. He was a much more vicious fighter, a much more maneuverable. He was more flexible fighter. Whereas Michael Keaton Batman, yeah, he scared some criminals and he fought a couple of tough criminals and he didn't really do anything. You know, yeah, he had cool gadgets. But Daredevil would probably, you know, if he throws him on a train track or on a Gotham train track, he's not saving him. So my point goes to Ben Affleck Daredevil. Now, Wes, you love Batman. You love the Batman 1989 film. Are you going to go with Batman or are you going to go with rational choice?
Yes, I am, because I'm smart. I'm going to go with Batman over anybody. Granted, it is Michael Keaton, but it's still Batman. I mean, you had to remind me just how awesome he was during Batman and Batman Returns. Is this not the movie where, like, this is the guy who beat up the Penguin, beat up the Joker, and
Matt Murdock and Ben Affleck took down.
He did nothing. He got beat up by a bale.
He broke Kingpin's kneecaps. That, I'm pretty sure that's something.
A guy who could barely get around because he's so overweight. That's really impressive. Batman took care of an entire city. And he got the girl. There is no girl in Matt Murdock's life because, let's face it, he's blind and that tends to suck.
She got harpooned in the chest.
You know.
That's why.
Elektra's not that great of a looker. Sorry. Come on, it's Michael Keaton. Bruce Wayne is better than Matt Murdock, so why isn't Batman better than Daredevil?
I'll agree with you right there. I would much rather hang out with Michael Keaton, Bruce Wayne, than mopey Matt Murdock, Ben Affleck, Matt Murdock, you know?
He got beat up by a bell. If all I have to do is bring Alfred along and, you know, ring his little bell, his little chime, it's over. Like, there's no point in fighting. I don't even have to open my utility bill. I can just, you know, kick you or something. All right. There's no contest. All none.
Right, so that's one for Daredevil, one for Batman. Arnold, break the tie.
Like him already. Is there really any question here? Batman, man.
Oh God, fuck me.
No, not at all. I
killed a man.
All about Batman.
He would do the same to Batman.
say what you want. Batman's killed people too. In those movies, he chucked some dude about down a mine shaft that exploded. I'm pretty sure that in the Batman Returns. Right. Let me find the clip now.
There you go. No, I know what you're talking about. Yeah, he actually did kill the guy. Yeah, I forgot about that.
So you've got Marks, bats all the way. Trying to find the vid clip of Batman asking if you want to get nuts because you're kind of nuts. Thinking that Ben Affleck Daredevil's winning any part of a fight between Michael Keaton and Bruce Wayne.
I got your boy. I got your back, man.
There you go.
And I think we just found the title of the episode. So there you go. through fixed outcomes, Michael Keaton Batman wins. God damn it. But ladies and gentlemen, that concludes episode number 66 of the Mighty Warriors Tomorrow podcast. A lot of positive in this. If we would have done this last week, I would have shit-poo-pooed all over Secret Avengers. Good Lord, that was awful. Anyways, you can find us at twitter.com/Warriors3PCast. All episodes, www.thewarriors3.com. Brandon, where can the people find you?
You can find me at thegreenlanterncore.com or check me out personally at twitter.com/thegeocore. Listen to the Green Lantern Corps podcast, where we discuss all things Green Lantern.
If you want the rant version of Brandon, follow Speedster site. That one's one of the rants. And of course, Arnold is getting ready for San Diego, which I can't believe. It's only about 6-7 weeks away.
Dude, who are you telling? I'm thoroughly excited, though.
Exactly. Yeah, I know, dude. I wish I could join you. I did my con for the year, though, so. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes episode number 66. Some quick announcements. Wes is actually, we are retconning Taser out of existence. We're going to make a new younger Taser. Wes is going to be replacing Taser. He's going to be more hip.
No! Audience. What about all the other fans that's been following Taser since number one? No!
Arnold is no longer going to be gay. He's going to be bi, just so we can reach out to a broader audience. And I'm going to be Batman.
Greedy.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you next week. Hopefully, real quick, I'm sorry. Our Civil War episode was supposed to come out this week, but due to certain people not showing up, we won't do it. It should be pushed back to next week, and unfortunately, because of that, we will try to get out both our Civil War specials and X-Men First Class specials out sometime next week, either A, with the regular Warriors 3, or B, two other people who just saw the movie. I will be part of it, though. So until next week, I'm Ben. Have a good week. Go buy comics. Bye, criminal.